Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I am your co-host, Coach Maples, aka J Mapes, here as always with Kings. Kings, what's popping?
Man, we're doing solid, you know, trying to, put away this NFL Sunday loss.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, this today didn't happen. You feel me? In my opinion, we just going to neuralize. Nah, man, shout out Floss, man. You got it today, 19-9.
I'm sick of that guy, man.
You got it, Floss. But nah, every now and then, like again, we just again want to reiterate how appreciative we are as you guys keep tapping in. Last week was our far most listened to episode. The homie Ball Don't Stop tapped in with us, gave us a gaze into his mind. That was honestly one of the funnest discussions I bet we've ever had on this show. We just did kind of want to give back. So, you know, we did the mailbag thing once. It was fun. So we're trying to make it more consistent. So we have our first mailbag episode. We got some good questions here, some jokes from some of the homies over here. But you ready to do this, bro?
Yes, sir. Let's do it. Tap into it.
First, from our good friend, supporter of the pop, Habibi Ting, that's what it is. Which team looks promising or safe on paper but will implode come playoff time, and why?
Man, that's a tough one. I might make some people upset with this one. But based on their trajectory last year and where they'll probably end up this year, you got to kind of take them. The Suns, probably.
Ooh.
The Suns, because think about it, you know, as bad as the Lakers have looked, I still have them somehow making the Western Conference Final. I think they're going to have a crazy deadline, and they're going to solve a lot of issues that they should have solved before.
You think it's going to be moving like that for the Lakers?
Yeah, because I think what had happened is I think Jeannie tried to be cheap and think she could compete with what it was. And I think Clutch is going to have that talk like they had with Dan Gilbert. Tell him, hey, if you want it to shape, you got to come up off the bread. So, you know what I mean? So, it's going to be one of those. And I think that you're going to see moves made at the deadline that's going to put them in position, I think, to be better than where they are now. Because I do think they have, you know, even though they lost a lot of flexibility for this rush trade, I still do think they have enough to fix the margins on the wings. I know it's a lot to ask of Trevor Ariza to come back and be great, but I do think Trevor Ariza will come back and fit really well with this team. And if they just get one starting caliber wing with the XX guards and the first round pick in 2027, they can just get one starting caliber wing. To make this work, and you know, to be able to just play off the other three guys, I think they'll be a Western Conference final team, and I think Golden State's the best team in the West. When they get Klay back and Wiseman, you can make a case they'll be the best team in the NBA. So I think they're going to be there. So I just think the Suns, the second round, all this is contingent again on the Lakers and the deadline, but I just think they'll make something happen. And I don't think, you know, the Suns will be able to beat them this year, in my opinion.
Huh. for me. And I actually like watching the team in the regular season this year, but I got to go with Utah, man. It's just.
See, I was thinking Utah first, but I feel like everybody expects them to fizzle out in the playoffs. Like, I think people are buying the Suns, and I get it. The Suns are really good. Like I said, I just think, you know, the Warriors are obviously going to be great this year. And I just think LeBron and AD, when healthy, and once they fix things at the deadline, we'll find a way to come out.
Yeah, it's just when I watched for the Jazz, obviously they're a regular season machine. They just know how to churn out wins, but the system is just pretty incredible. I just my only thing is if Rudy has taken the steps offensively to where they can't get punished by small ball. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at it, Rudy had his best year actually defending off switches last year. He wasn't a liability at all. Didn't make any sense to really, you know, switch out on him or attack him in pick and roll and get him to switch. He was much better. The issue is when teams go small and he has to end up having his primary matchup as a small guy and he was drawn away from the rim and exposed the other four guys. That was the issue defensively. Now, offensively, what he had to do, in my opinion, was be dominant enough against 6'5", 6'6", guys where the other coach had to keep a big out there and pretty much nullify the five out that that the Clippers were attacking him with, and he just couldn't do it. I just haven't seen the offensive jump necessary for them to get over that hump. But they'll be a number, you know, 2-3 seed when all said and done. I think they just churn out wins. And then a lot of people keep telling me that not having Conley was the bigger issue. But, you know, we'll see.
You know, for a funny thing, for all the talk about, you know, the Blazers, you know, not blowing it up and all that, they've gone farther in this stretch than the Jazz have. The Jazz is still not seeing the conference final, or at least the Blazers may win. So
I think it's because Donovan Mitchell is only 25.
Well, yeah, I know it's because he's young, but it's just like, do you expect him to do it this year? No. So then he becomes, what, 26 next year? Do you expect him to do it next year? It's like, you know, at some point they got to make the decision. The Blazers have to – you just have to –
Well, I just think, well, he just signed his extension. They just extended Rudy. I think the stuff about, like, Ingles is in his early mid-30s, Conley's mid-30s, so stuff like that.
That's what I mean. Guys like that are going to have to get flipped. You know, not obviously you're going to build around, you're going to build around Mitchell, you're going to build around Rudy, but, you know, guys like, Conley, guys like Ingles, guys like Bogdanovich, you know, you got to possibly come up with those guys and see if you can find somebody else to fill in that third role. Maybe go for Malcolm Brogdon, and try and make that your third. Like, you have to try and get creative.
Yeah, I raised this to people who know. They said the owner of the Jazz is, like, filthy rich. Like, he's not pressed by any of this tech stuff at all.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of owners, even though it's a smaller market, they say he's not pressed at all by any of this luxury tech. So he's going to do whatever to keep the window open. So that's the other thing. They're a small market team, but not typical small market. So I think they'll hang on as long as they think they got a legitimate shot. But we'll see. Maybe have them a Dallas Mavericks year that you know, breakthrough. And everybody said break it up. They pushed through.
Yeah, definitely could.
All right. Kevin or Stellar asks, what skill sets are a priority to you guys for successful basketball?
That's a good one. For me, you got to be able to, I think you got to be able to attack closeouts. You got to be able to make decisions, make quick decisions with the ball without having to dribble the ball. And you also have to, I think for me, you also have to be able to finish at the rim. I think those things are important, and cutting. I think those skills are important because most guys are not going to be stars. You know what I mean? So it becomes, what traits can you make to maximize your role, you know, maximize your role as a role player? I think that's what's the type of traits you need to have to be a good player. Obviously, now if you're talking about what you're going to need to be to make a good star, now we can get into, okay, you got to be able to have counters.
Right.
Finish in the mid-range, got to be able to finish with both hands, you know, up and under. You know, talk about the bag, you know what I mean? Like, are you going to be a post guy, oriented guy? Are you going to be a perimeter oriented guy with the hezzies, all that? But you just talk about in sense of the general NBA player. I think you got to be able to finish. You got to be able to attack closeouts. You got to be able to make decisions without the ball. You know, basically the type of role players you be having success in the Warrior system. You know, you talk about guys being able to read and react, guys being able to cut, guys being able to finish, guys being able to hit open shots, being able to attack closeouts, and be able to make quick decisions and for their team and put their teams in a good place to succeed.
Right. I this is a twofold question for me. Like, just from an IQ standpoint, I think what skill set is your processing speed, able to see, to be able to see what's going on in front of your process at a high efficiency and make the right decision. I think that's a good skill. But for me, if I was to pick one, I'm a big Harper, like on shooting, but I think just if you can handle the basketball and get where you want to go, I think that makes you, you know, very useful in the basketball court. Like you said, attack closeouts, things like that, put the defense really at a disadvantage. I think that's the most important thing. Also, this is also position dependent as well. You right. know, so that's the other part of the question. But I think if you can handle the ball, I think that sets you up to be, you know, successful. You know, obviously, there's always going to be place for shooters, but I think being able to compromise a defense off the bounce is extremely important as well. It's probably the two main things, in my opinion. So, good question, Kevin or Stellar. From M. Lee 98. Oh, this is a good one. We've been meaning to talk about this for a minute anyway. The Bulls are currently second in the East. I think they moved to first actually tonight with the win. Do you think they should trade the assets of Pat Will, Kobe, Ayo, or let the young guys grow with the core?
This really comes down to can you retain Zach LaVine? Or Zach, you know, Zach LaVine, can you retain him, right? Because, you know, if he's resigning, that's one of those things where you could wait out Pat Williams' development. But also it comes down to what type of team you want to build as well, I think. Do you have enough room for Pat Williams to develop the way he needs to develop, right? Because you're going to be relying on Zach LaVine. You're going to have DDR and Lonzo be it those next guys either create for themselves like DeMar does or create for others like Alonzo does. If you're going to lose those guys, then what use? How does Pat Williams develop? You know what I mean? So then it becomes probably better in that sense to move Pat Williams, to move Kobe White then for somebody that is going to give you that dominance at the five spot. You know what I mean? If you're looking at if, you know, the Suns don't want to pay Aiden, maybe you start giving up picks and you giving up Williams, you giving up Kobe, and you call them up and you be like, hey, if you don't want to pay him, we'll give you these. Hey. So it's like, you know, you have to start thinking like that. If you're the Bulls, if you're really going to build off LaVine, you're going to really going to build off DeMar, you're really going to build off Caruso, you're going to build off Alonzo, then it's like, okay, you need that big. Vucevic's really not that guy who's going to be that, you know, both ends. But you can get somebody, Aiden, if you can get somebody, you know, even though Cat isn't, gives you the same issues Vucevic gives you defensively, he gives you way more offensively.
I think he's more consistent and reliable offensively.
More consistent on offense. So it's like if you can get a Cat, if you can get a, you know, an Aiden, you know what I mean? I think then you have to start looking at, okay, let's see if we can package Pat, Kobe, and more picks and really build the contender based off the core we have right now.
That is a good one. Now, what I think with the Bulls is, I think a lot of it is, where do they think they are as a team? Yeah. If you feel like you made this jump and you had these pieces and you're this – you know, far away, right? You maybe package those guys. You know, Sacramento, I feel like it's going to just pretty much blow everything up soon. You say, hey, take these young guys who aren't on big deals yet. Let's add it up and then give us Harrison Barnes, right? Let's say you're able to add Harrison Barnes to what they're doing and Harrison Barnes can kind of replace what Pat was, right? That 3-4 hybrid spot, but he's just more experienced, playoff experience, right? And I think that, and I think that's the Bulls' weakness anyway, is the what I see, they just don't have a guy for a KD or a Giannis. Like, say, here, you guard that guy, or here's a size for that guy. Because right now it's big on, like, Lonzo's guarding somebody. Lonzo's guarding bigger wings right now. Even Caruso's guarding bigger wings right now. I don't know if you want DeRozan. You know, he's scoring low, so you're not going to want him guarding, chasing those guys around. They just don't have a big wing stopper. And even Harrison Barnes is not a stopper. He's just he's a good defender.
But and this is my point, though. When you look at how they're going to close out, they're going to close out with Caruso. They're going to close out with Lonzo. They're going to close with DeMar. They're going to close with LaVine, right? That's how they're going to close games. So that means the five has to be an elite defender. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I say they need to go for an Ayton. You know, they need to go fishing for Ayton or somebody of that caliber defensively at the five. Maybe a Miles Turner that's cheaper. You know what I'm saying? Like, they need to get that type of big, because they're going to be closing with Caruso, Lonzo, DeMar, LaVine. So then they need the backline guy to be able to clean up people's mess. I think realistically, they should be looking at Miles Turner. I think that would be the most realistic get for them without giving up too much.
Right. And here's my thing. Like, the Bulls aren't really in, like, how does their defense translate to the playoffs for you? Because their defense has been way better than advertised, because, you know, without a shot blocker, everybody figured, well, with Vooch back there, no shot blocker, you got LaVine, DeRozan, who are mid at best on defense. You know, Lonzo, Caruso are smaller guards, not going to be able to match up. Their defense has been pretty top tier to start the season. Do you think that's something that translates, or they need to get that big? What do you think?
I think DeMar and Zach LaVine done a good job of competing on that end. You know, so you know, because Lonzo and Caruso, you know what they're going to give you. But I think LaVine and DeMar competing on that end and not being, you know, not making it easy is what's allowing them to be a formidable defense and not being one that has weak links. You know what I mean? Because even as good as Caruso and Lonzo is, if DeMar and LaVine are not, competing on that end, they're gonna get got. You know what I mean? They're gonna be able to be given a point. But I think them competing is what's keeping them afloat. But we all know what it is in the playoffs when the game slows down, gets physical, and guys are hunting, and guys are looking to exploit the weaknesses. That's when that rim pressure is really going to get to them. That's when the guys like Harden, the guys like Giannis, the guys like Embiid, the guys like Jimmy Butler, that's when they're going to become a problem, is when these games slow down and those guys are living inside and there's just not anybody inside who can stop them. And that's why I said they need to go out. I think they need to, you know, Ayton is like a big pawn type of thing. Like, it's something like that's like a lottery hit. You know what I mean? But it's like, I think they need to just get Miles Turner. I think they need to really go get Miles. It's like, they believe that they could really compete. I think they need to get Miles Turner.
That's crazy, because the Pacers seem to be holding on to these players. They have this dream of just being extremely mediocre. Instead of not broken. They could get things. They have so many players that they could really stock up on a ton of young assets for. So
yeah, I mean, a lot of picks.
We'll see how that goes. Another Bulls related question, real quick, to add on to this, we'll have to go back to it. How serious do you guys take the Bulls? Or are they just a cute first round exit? And that is from LV_Bentley. How do y'all feel about the Bulls so far? Do you think they go the distance, or are they a scrappy first round exit? I don't think they go the distance, but my ceiling for them is they could be last year's Hawks, where they stay, depending on they get the right matchup in the second round, they could like find themselves in the conference finals and be like, how the hell did they get there? Like, that's my ceiling for them.
Yeah, they would have to get a good draw.
Right.
I'm not sure that they will, though, because the reason why I say that is because, one, they're good in the regular season, so they'll probably get a high seed, which means that it really depends on the seeding, because they're good and if they finish in the top three, right, then they're most likely going to be able to see, you know, a New York Knicks, you know what I mean? They're going to be able to play, They're going to be able to play like a Boston or Charlotte team. So that's when it's like, okay, or maybe even a Washington Wizards, you know, then it's like, okay, you know, yeah, I can see you going to the second round, you know, at that point, they may be getting a good matchup in the second round as well. But even then in the second round, like, I just don't think they can avoid, I can't see them getting a conference round because they're not going to be able to avoid Miami, Boston, Miami, Milwaukee, and Brooklyn before the conference finals. Like, I just don't see that. I don't think there's any path for them to avoid all three of the four conference finals. I think for me, their ceiling's a second round team because they're going to face one of those three teams, and they will not be able to match up with those teams in the playoff series. And because of what we said about the weakness inside, but also, and the Bulls fans want to be upset. They want to believe because, you know, they're back, they're playing great. But look, bro, the same way people talk about Russell Westbrook because of what they've seen and the film he's shown is the same thing with DeMar DeRozan. I don't care if you don't want to hear it. I don't care if it don't sound good. But we say this for a reason. We've seen it multiple times. We have the stats to show it. We could just look at the most recent playing game as an example of what happens. Like, I'm sorry. The evidence is there. The film is there. Same thing with Russell Westbrook. And when people say Laker fantasy stop being delusional, we see Westbrook. Well, you need to stop doing the same thing with DeMar DeRozan, bro. Like, it's the same thing. It's if it happens, nobody will be shocked. But it's hard to believe that it won't happen. So I'm just not going to go like pretend like it won't happen. I got them capped as a second round team.
I actually don't hate the Miami matchup for them, but we'll keep a close eye on that. But other two, I get you because I just don't think they have anybody to guard stars. But the Miami matchup, I don't hate it for them. But you raise a great point about DeRozan. Which one will show up? We don't know. So we'll see. Let's see here. Adam Thomas, the Honorable AT, asks, how do you think the Luke Walton firing will affect the play-in in the West with Coach Gentry taking over as interim coach? I think they will look a lot more fluid offensively. If anything, Alvin is an incredible offensive mind. So I think offensively, I think Sacramento has a chance to really blossom into some rhythm. They just can't guard anybody. I have them as a fringe playing team anyway. Out there with, you know, Minnesota, I think is down there. Denver lost possibly Porter for the season, but you know, Jokic is a tank, so we don't know. Jokic is just, he knows how to win in the regular season, but yeah, I just think they're a fringe playing team, probably bottom like in that 9, 10, 11 more so than 7, 8, 9, but I don't think much changes. You know, I think Gentry's an improvement over Luke, to be honest. But what about you, King?
Yeah, offensively, they're going to be way better, and Luke's calling card, I think, what in the league, for what it's has been his defensive prowess. That's what people have harped on him is that he's made, you know, younger teams be able to be up tempo, but also be able to compete on the defensive end. And that's what he was doing with the Lakers, you know, supposedly. But offensively, Luke Walton always looked lost in terms of trying to get, you know, organized flow, organized sets. It's always been just more up tempo than anything else. But I think Alvin Gentry will have the same up-tempo. I feel like he'll have better plays. He'll have better sets. You know what I mean? He'll have better principles as well. Gentry can coach offense. That's just without a doubt. Defensively, it's going to be – they're not going to play a lot of it. But maybe they'll be a funner team, a funner product. And maybe that's what they need to be with this type of, with the type of guys they run. I mean, Rashawn Holmes with the undersized guy. They play Hallie and Fox together. I think it's just better for them to lean on their offense, especially with Buddy Hield being a crucial part. Better for them to lean on their offense and focus on getting key stops here and there with Barnes, with Mitchell, and with Hallie to just get stops here and there and then try to outscore teams. I think that's their best shot of being competitive.
Yeah, actually an interesting stat I heard about Sac. Every starter has a positive net rating except De'Aaron Fox. Like, that was kind of insane to me. How that worked with Zach. And maybe that's because he plays a lot of second units or whatever. So that's obviously what goes in. There's a lot that goes into that. But I found that very interesting that every starter except De'Aaron Fox had a positive net rating. So we'll see what happens with Sack. I thought Alvin maybe, you know, probably best that he did move on from New Orleans, but, you know, maybe not the best ending, but hopefully he does well though. You know, I'm always support black coaches, even if they do, you know, coach at a rival. Let's see here. Got a bunch of Laker questions. We're going to save those for down the road. Here we go. What guard should the Pelicans draft? I'm going to say this. That team is so terrible right now. They just need to take the best player available and work it from there. They're not in the position to be saying what doesn't fit. That's my assessment on the pill. We haven't talked much about the Pelicans. We're not going to be spending time talking about a 2-97 basketball team. But yeah, whenever the Pelicans are drafting where I think they are, they just got to take the best people. Whether it's Chet, Paolo, or Hardy, that's the top three. Whatever they pick, just take the guy and then move forward and figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's really it. Pick available. I mean, I would have to do all those. I have to do a deep dive on the scouts, on the guards too. But I always like to do my scouting on prospects later in the year. I don't like to do it like I don't like to project early because so much can change with college prospects from now to later. So I always like to do my scouting after the games has been played. So I can't tell you who they should draft, because that will change in like the next few months. So, but like, as Maple said, wherever they're drafting, just that's available because they need everything. Right. that's what it is.
Right. So, you know, that was an easy one. Good one. Here we go. Blake 3234 asks, what is the perfect spot for Ben Simmons out of these three teams, Clippers, Hawks, or Timberwolves? I don't think the Clippers have the assets to trade for him. So I'm probably going to nix them out. I would absolutely love him to be with the Hawks. I know King's probably going to lean Timberwolves. That's his squad. But I think the Hawks and Timberwolves can put competitive offers together for him. I'm probably going to lean Hawks. But so who you got there?
Yeah, I remember I brought that up on one of our episodes. I actually said the Hawks should be one of the teams that do. I don't know if Philly would be interested in doing it to an individual rival, especially one that beat them the way that they did. But I do think the Hawks would be a good fit, and I think it would be the most competitive fit for Ben Simmons, where he could actually help a quote-unquote contender while the Philly obviously gets good assets in return. But I think Minnesota can still also give assets in terms of good high picks as well as some, decent young talent for them. So I think either or, but I think the Hawks is the best.
Wow, Timberwolves fan said the Hawks was the best.
Yeah, it's the best fit, but I because of the in-conference shit, or because, you know, sorry, shoot my cousin, but because of the in-conference competition, the Wolves will probably be what they prefer.
Copy. All right, good one. M underscore Bilal 35 asks, even though shooting is a premium in the league, you guys think committing big money to players with only elite skill is shooting can be a bad idea? That is a great question. And my answer is absolutely yes, it can be a bad idea.
Well, can you repeat that question?
He said, even though shooting is at a premium in the league, do you think committing big money to players whose only elite skill is shooting can be a bad idea? And my answer to that is absolutely yes. First example that pops in my head is Bertans for the Wizards.
Yep.
All he did was shoot. He shot extremely well. They got him the big money, and you know.
Well, let's look at the guys. Let's really look at these recent guys who've gotten paid,
right?
Because they're such elite shooters, and now everybody's like, "That's a bad contract." Bertans, Duncan Robinson, and also the boy Joey Harris over there. And
right.
All these dudes who got big money because they were elite at shooting, now they're looking like liabilities. So it's the extremes in basketball. It just never pays off. Like, if you're too extreme with one skill set, like, it's just paying somebody just to be that only
It's just not going to be useful. You know, guys like Buddy Hield, guys like Seth Curry, who can shoot the ball at a high level, but also can able to do more things offensively. Those guys have more value in certain offensive roles on competitors because, or contenders, because they're able to be more dynamic offensively. Harris is not dynamic. Duncan Robinson, not dynamic. Bertans are not dynamic. They literally just come off screens and shoot 10 threes a game. That's all they do.
Curry's contract compared to some of these other shooters was just kind of amazing to me, considering he had like a lot of his stuff off the dribble. But you know, we'll see how that develops. I think that's definitely going to be a pendulum that's going to swing back the other way in terms of paying all these shooters and to do nothing else well, big money. So that was a great question. Yes, absolutely, it can burn you. Absolutely, I think the Wizards regret it. I think the Nets regret it, and unless Robinson makes a big, he is on my fantasy team and he's tanking it a lot right now. So unless Duncan Robinson turns that around, I think Miami will start to regret it. So we'll see how it goes, man. We'll see how it goes. Shooting is definitely, you know, that's a tricky thing to evaluate in the league. What should the Knicks do to fix the starting lineup? Background behind this question, the Knicks have the worst starting lineup net rating in the NBA of all starting lineups. And somebody said, what should the Knicks do to fix their starting lineup? Well, first of all, you got your best point guard on the roster coming off the bench, which is Derrick Rose.
I think that's the one problem.
He's comfortable in that six man role right now. I think Tibbs has been finishing games anyway, so that's what really matters. I think the other thing is you need Julius Randle to play better. He was second team All NBA last year, and he's not anywhere close to that right now. I think that's the main thing. The guys you lean on aren't giving you what you want. And on top of that, Fournier's been absolutely terrible. Everybody thought he was a sneaky ad, and he's been awful.
Yeah, Fournier's cooked. Randle fell back to earth, but he's still giving 20. It's on 43, but he's giving you 20 and 10. Look. You drafted this guy. What is he, the number two pick? At some point, you have to show up, bro. 15 points a game on 39% shooting. Year three, this guy's in year three. That is the number one problem for the Knicks. This guy is not playing at even a star level. If RJ Barrett gave you 21, 5-5 on 40 to 45%, we are not having this conversation. We just aren't having this conversation. But he's been bad. Not even just bad, he's been terrible. He's been absolutely terrible. That is their main reason why the offense sucks, because now you need Kemba to do more. Now you need Fournier to do more. And they're just not capable of doing more than a limited role. You need RJ to be a star level player so you can also take pressure off Randle. Because if RJ puts those numbers up, Randle's numbers go up. Fournier's numbers go up. Kemba Walker's numbers go up. Because guess what? Now teams are shifting coverages to RJ Barrett, letting these other guys get easier, better looks, and being able to produce better. But because you can't do anything, now you have to rely on all these other guys to be better.
We got to be careful with that. You know, RJ Barrett is, you know, that's New York THT, boy. They don't play about RJ Barrett slamming.
I get it. He's your number two pick. I get you. But guys, he's not giving you anything. I don't know what to tell you. He's just not doing it.
Yeah, I think last year he actually took a big jump. After struggling his rookie year, so I think he maybe hit another wall. So we'll see. I was one of those guys who I always believed in RJ Barrett. I thought that Duke team was just a bad fit. So a lot of the guys looked a lot worse than they actually were because the spacing was so bad. You had Reddish, Barrett, and Zion on the same team. You feel me? It was just an odd fit. But we'll see how much the Knicks, man. You know, I watched him a lot because Randall's one of my favorite players. You know, baby Lakers, hold it down. But yeah, their offense is just it's rough to watch, man. Watching that team play offense between the lack of on ball creation, you know, Kemba doesn't have the same burst. Randle was never he's more of a bull in a china shop than because guy's going to outright beat you. So it's real tough for the Knicks offensively at this point in time. Here's another good one. You both have often referred to the playoffs as chess matches because they're all about coaching matchups, adjustments, etc. Do you think this year's rule changes will affect playoff strategies, and which chess match would you like to see the most? That is a good one. I absolutely think the rule changes affect playoff strategies. Normal. So, I mean, the playoffs are always going to be, I mean, on the first round, playoffs is always a chess match. I don't think the rules are going to make that any more or less so, right? It's always going to be, and they kind of tighten the whistle up anyway when it comes to that, to the that level of basketball. So I wouldn't necessarily say the rule changes would make that happen even more. It's going to happen anyway. But to answer the second part of the question, what chess match would I like to see the most? I would love to see Ty Lue versus Kerr if they get Kawhi back. That would, I think that would be fun to watch. So that's the matchup that I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing again. But what do you got, Kings?
So for me, I think the rules, like, because I just feel like every single playoffs, it always gets back to slow down, let physicality happen. So I think it's just going to be the same thing. But I think the rules are going to, I guess, bring it back to maybe even more of a thousands level feel, because now you have these new rules. Then you have the playoff reference. I think it's just going to be more additive. So now you're going to get way more throwback type of style with the playoffs. But, you know, we always used to the playoffs being slow grinded out. As far as the chess match, again, I'm really interested if we get Bucks and Heat part three.
I don't think
we're going to see any sweeps this time around. I think we're going to be in for a real battle. I think that series could go the distance.
Oh, man, you're going to try to put, trying to hang butt out to dry again.
That's what I said, man. If we get Bucks and Heat part three, third matchup, you know what I mean? Each team has swept each other the past 2 years, and it'd be interesting to see how that comes out.
Right. Okay, we got all of our non-Warrior and Laker questions out the way. So we got a couple of Warriors questions, bunch of Warriors questions, bunch of Lakers questions. Let's start with the Dubs. Here we go. If Golden State messes around and wins again, do you think their title window extends, or will it be a one-off? I think it extends. Honestly, outside of that core three, they got a lot of young guys. They're basically trying to mimic that Spurs model, that compete as we compete and rebuild at the same time. So we'll see how that goes. I think the window definitely expands. I think also Steph is one of those guys who's going to age extremely well with his conditioning and how he takes care of his body. And shooting is, you know, the last thing to go on, guys. If they mess around and win it, I think, you know, they got a whole two-three-year windows. Nobody else really, you know, pushed them. You know, Lakers are going to be long in the tooth. The Nets, depending on, you know, how Harden ages, I think he's getting a little bit better shape now, but it's still clear he's not the same guy he was in Houston. Milwaukee's always going to be interesting as long as Giannis is there and in his 20s, they're always going to be a factor. But, yeah, I think if the Warriors win, they got another two-three-year window. What about you?
Yeah, I do think the Warriors have that window there because they're good. Like their core is good. Their core is aging pretty well. Draymond, for whatever reason, still is able to compete defensively at a high level. And they're good and doing a good job of monitoring at the five. And if Wiseman comes along, they're really going to be able to protect Draymond more long term. It's just going to be finding a contract value to keep him there. But they've also drafted, I think, guys who really fit what they want to do. Kuminga can transition to a Draymond and Iggy type role with his athleticism, his bounce, and his IQ.
Yep.
Moody can also become a nice, smart guard who can actually give Curry the backup guard presence he hasn't had if he's developed properly. Poole can be an elite type of six man in the NBA. So that's something that, you know, in terms of having a dynamic six-man score, they didn't have that in their first go-around run. They had guys who were good at what they do, making smart decisions, playing off the stars, and playing as a whole. But they didn't have a real microwave guy off the bench. They can have that in Poole. He gets under control. And and if Klay comes back and he keeps getting healthier, like you said, if they win this year and Klay's only going to be healthier next year, their younger guys are going to have another year under their belt. They really have a new window, man. It's,
You know, we didn't see the vision. We didn't see the vision, but light years is back, unfortunately. It's just hard for me to see them falling off anytime soon because they're young. They have a good mix of young and old guys, and it's just hard to see them really falling off.
Yeah, and the other Dubs question they wanted to add to that said, what is the Dubs' current weakness despite how good they're getting? That's Benjamin 2000. What's the biggest weakness for the Warriors, and which team is best suited to exploit that weakness? I went over this actually with some Warrior fans. I was talking to two of them. I think in a playoff series, as defense gets tired, they are going to need another shot creator off the ball. I don't know if Jordan Poole is ready to be the second best guy at that on a championship team. Kings did raise a good point a few seconds ago, actually, when he said that they actually did not have a guy like that in the 2015 championship run. They actually didn't have a guy like Poole who could create beyond Steph. I just think it's a different game now, even, you know, 6 years later. You need guys who can, you know, compromise the defense off the bounce. I think that's the one thing they're missing. Thing is, they do have the assets to try to make that happen. Also, I don't love their size a lot of the time. I think they need one more dependable big. I've heard glowing things about how Wiseman looks as far as, you know, developing his body. We'll see if, you know, he took mental reps in his time off. I think of all the rookies or young guys who needed summer league and a whole offseason to work on their game, he was probably hindered the most having to sit it out and just rehab. So I think those are the two issues, another on-ball shot creator and one more dependable big.
Yeah, for me, I for what you can exploit them with, I think the team that can really exploit them is a Jokic. Think a guy who can match up with inside out, with Draymond, and with their bigs, and force those, you know, force those guys on the outside to have to help and then dice them up, because that's how LeBron was getting them, right? He was doing inside out action, dicing up their defense because the guys he was who was in front of him couldn't stop him. They had to give the help, and he was making the right decision every time. That's the type of guy who's going to be able to exploit the Warriors. So I think a Jokic type who can do that inside out is going to do that. But like you said, if they get that Wiseman gets that jump and he can put that pressure inside and really provide the size that they need, the athleticism they need inside, I think that fixes a lot for them. But you're banking a lot on Wiseman, man. That's really what it comes down to. Wiseman is the key for their window, because the issues they have, he theoretically solves, but we have to see it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see like that how serious this Warriors team is. They can keep everybody upright. They're going to be a tough out. The team, I can't think of a team that I think that's really going to exploit that. There's those things that are just naturally going to hinder you if you don't have those things. But definitely the teams with good centers who are going to make Looney a liability. Phoenix, possibly. They actually play on the 30th. I'm really going to be paying attention to that. If the Clippers were healthy, I really think Warriors-Clippers would be some special basketball. Two teams are going to, you know, spread it out, play small, a lot of movement around their guy. So that would be fun if the Clippers get Kawhi back. I would love to see that. So we'll see how that develops as the season goes on. Now we got a gang of Laker questions. Some of this stuff is actually kind of hilarious. Here we go, Grant Hudson. Big fan of the show. Hopefully the elbow game is a turnaround for the Lakers, but what's y'all over under on how long Frank lasts before Brown gets him up out of here? I got Christmas to the beginning of the year at the latest. And also, two other people asked, do you think Frank Vogel's getting fired? So let's start there. Do you think Frank is going to make it through the season?
Now, at first I said he wasn't, but it really comes down to who can they replace him with. And it's nobody they can replace him with. So I just think by the fact that there's nobody competent that's out there, he's not fired. Like, let me put it like this. If Alvin Gentry was on the Lakers, he would have got fired before Luke. But Alvin Gentry's on the Kings, so therefore Luke got fired. So whoever signed Alvin Gentry to be on their bench was whoever was going to fire their coach who was on the hot seat, because you get a guy like Alvin Gentry to be on your coaching staff if you don't trust the type of coach you have there, right? That's the only reason why you get a coach like Alvin Gentry to be on your staff. But you know, so they don't have a coach like that, right? So for me, then it's like, can't put Fizdale up there. There's nobody on the market that you could get that's going to really help you like that. If they could do a situation where they could pull a Finch like the T-Wolves did, then yeah, maybe they could move on, right? If they can get a nice little up and coming young assistant. But then it's like, you trust that guy as good as they are on X's and O's, you trust them to be able to manage a locker room like the Lakers, because that's also not an easy task to do. So it's one of those things, they just have to let it play out. So I really just don't see him getting fired anymore at this point.
You know what's crazy? I looked back at some of the articles. Like, they had Tyronn Lue. Like, he was interested. They just lowballed him. I saw you brought up a couple times about, you know, Genie getting kind of cheap.
Yeah.
And they lowballed Lue. You know, he was looking for it. And fairly enough, this is Lue has earned it. He's looking for championship coach compensation, which he has proven that he deserves. You look at what he's doing with the Clippers. And he's actually going to have Vogel as a defensive coordinator, which was, oddly enough, which was going to be the plan. But to be fair to Vogel, he did win a championship with this roster, with the Lakers. So, like, you know, not knocking what he actually did accomplish here. I was just putting that out there. I actually heard from a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy that if the Lakers do move on from Vogel, it's not who you think is going to get – it won't go to Fizdale. They said Handy is actually the inside – the guy on the inside track.
That's what I've been hearing. That's what I've been hearing, too. I've been seeing that. I've been seeing a push for that. I've been seeing a push for Handy to get that one.
Right. So that's my
thing. My thing is, Handy's so good with development. I'm not sure how he is with handling in-game adjustments, X's and O's.
Right.
And that's a whole different level. That's a whole different level, you know, of who it's not sure what he is when it comes to that aspect.
Right. So that's, you know, something to keep an eye out. Here we go. I think this is not really a question. I think Eduardo just wanted to get some slander off. LeBron doesn't have the same burst when driving to the rim, and y'all still relying on old ass Melo to bail out your disgusting offense. Do you honestly think this team is capable of winning a title? Y'all have zero trades to be made to. Well, tell us how you really feel, Eduardo. I definitely see the stuff with LeBron's burst. I think the main thing I point out with the Celtics game, I think he's still not 100% is he had Al Horford out in space and couldn't really create an advantage. So I think, you know, that's definitely something to keep an eye on as the season goes on, if you know, what LeBron can do athletically. I don't think they were relying on Melo. They just, you know, he's feeding off the attention that AD and LeBron get. People are making the right reads. He's getting open shots. I think it's designed that way, not relying on him. The Lakers been looking for consistent shooting. He's been bringing it. I think this team is capable of winning a title? I'm starting to waver a little bit. I think certain things have to go your way to get to a championship. And I think those top of the West is very good. So they got to start figuring out some things out soon. We'll see, but I am wavering on that a little bit. Kings.
I think the Lakers can win the championship.
Yes. So I'm wavering.
There's no wavering for me. I'll tell you guys. Let's ask me this question after the deadline. That's my answer.
Okay, so basically we saying no, but we're going to make some trades.
Yes, ask me this question after the deadline. That's what I'll answer with.
All right. Eduardo with the slander. All right. This is a good one. All right, from Hoop Fiasco, Hoop A Fiasco. Underrated, lower-level player you want the Lakers to ask about on the trade-eligible day, which is December 15th.
Yeah, so they're asking who's an underrated guy.
Not like a big name. Somebody underrated you think who would really help the Lakers?
His contract, not ideal. But Terrence Ross is somebody because he can really play off ball in a way that he has a good on-ball skills, but he can really play off ball in a way that guys like Monk and THT can't without needing to get a rhythm. Like, Terrence Ross doesn't need the ball in his hands to really get a rhythm. He can just get hot instantly if he's getting good looks. I think also another guy who's under goes under radar, Justin Holiday. I think would be really good for
the team.
And I think he's also a lot more affordable. So I think that's another good player to look at. Justin Holiday is another good one. I think those two guys will be key guys. Or another one, but he's a buyout type of guy, more than a trade guy. Gary Harris, I think, is another good one too.
Yeah, he actually got paid and then kind of fell off a cliff a little bit with the injuries. But yeah, that's also that's one of the candidates on my list, actually. A guy I'd like them to look at, depending on how the salary matches, Josh Hart, actually, a former Laker. he's been pretty good. And I think the way Pelicans are, knowing they have no chance, they're going to look to move guys for assets. So I don't know how the compensation will work. But he's, 6'5", plays bigger than his size. He fits the wing. You don't lose much shooting with him this year. Shooting it very well from three. We'll see how it sticks. But I think Josh Hart is somebody that they definitely should take a look at. So that's just, and I don't know what OKC is doing. But I ask, about Lu Dort. Even though I think he might be playing his way out of a gettable price range, but that Lu Dort's probably the best contract in basketball, actually, given what he signed.
You don't need to really come off the asset for that one,
right? So that's the only thing. And I honestly, I have to think about, do you want to trade THT for that guy? Because that's what it's going to take to get a certain level of help. I think THT is the one asset a lot of teams would be like, all right, we can see that, long-term, right, helping this team. I don't think anybody – there's not another long-term – do they even have another long-term asset, right, depending on how teams look at Reeves, right?
2027, first
right,
round.
Right. And do you even trade Reeves? I mean, you got to have some type of youth on your team, right? You
can't trade Reeves because he also fits the archetype. Reeves will actually be a rotation player when the playoffs come, so that's another thing. So you can't trade him. He's a cheap guy who plays off the stars well and will be able to actually contribute to you. He's an actually good player, a good role player. So he has to be retained.
All right. Next question. These are mostly Laker stuff now. What does Frank Vogel need to do to improve rotations and the defense? Defensively, I think the Lakers are just struggling there. They just can't contain the ball. That's the main thing, no matter who's out there. The second thing is, I think he's probably just sad part is because they won today. He's not going to see how bad of a process it was before the fight inspired the team. But starting DeAndre Jordan is just like asking for a deficit with something. I think this is a terrible match, terrible, because he's not even a good defender anymore. He's just in the way on offense. So it just puts him in a hole. So I think the rotation thing I would change is not playing DeAndre Jordan. The other thing I did, he finally stopped playing Bazemore. Avery Bradley hasn't been playing great. So maybe start Ellington. I don't know. They have three big contracts and a bunch of minimum guys who are playing like minimum guys outside of Melo. So I don't know what the answer is to a lot of the stuff. Or there's no clear answer to a lot of the stuff is what I'll say. Go ahead, Kings.
Yeah, man, you can't that, – and that's the problem why you can't rely on minimum guys.
Right.
There's a reason why Gilbert had to pay Tristan Thompson. There's a reason why he had to pay J.R. Smith. He had to pay Shum. You know what I mean? Because you have to pay – you have to retain the talent, bro. Like, you can't be cheap and expect to win, bro. They have to trade – they have to trade for a wing, bro. Like, they just have to trade for a wing and prey on the buyout. When you trade for that wing, have roles open up and pray you win on the buyout, because they just don't have pieces that fit. It's not like even if I say pull DeAndre Jordan off, they don't have a wing to defend the perimeter, because Bron's not playing wing defense right now. He's not trying to play defense. They don't have guard defense because Russell Westbrook doesn't want to play defense, even though he doesn't have an offensive load that he needs to carry. Still doesn't want to defend a high level. So it's like, man, I really just want to tell people, ask me about the Lakers after the deadline, bro. Like, I just really want people to do that, because
I don't have much good things to say about them. Like, I really just don't. The fit is bad. Defense is bad. Just, they're not playing good basketball. And, you know, it's not like – and people keep bringing up Miami, Cleveland, bro. LeBron was 30. He was 27, 28. Like, come on, man. Stop doing that. You know what I mean? Like –
those are prime carrying years.
And even Westbrook is old now. Like, you know, he had the younger way. He had young Kyrie. Like, come on, bro. Stop doing that. Stop bringing up whole completely different rosters and just thinking because they both have LeBron James, it's the same thing. Like, it's not the same thing, man. Like, it's not the same thing. Like, the Lakers are old. The players they have are like a clunky fit. Because at least with the Heat, it was like everybody else was a shooter and a 3-and-D guy. Like, you had Battier, you had, you know, you had Chalmers, you know what I mean? You could call on Norris Cole, you know what I'm saying? You had, you know, you could call on guys who could, you could ask to defend when needed, you know what I'm saying? But you don't have that with the Lakers right now. So it's like,
right,
just you, they we need to wait for the deadline and see how they fix holes, because it's clear holes on the roster. And you know, like those Cleveland Cavaliers team, people keep saying, oh, they were 19-19. Well, you know what they did? They traded everyone at the deadline. Because how do you think they got J.R., Shumpert, Mozgov, and all those? They traded everybody. So, like I said, wait till the deadline. We'll talk.
All right. Here we go. All right. Would you trade from Michael Holick? Would you trade THT for a bigger wing player? And if yes, who would it be? Again, THC is confused. We don't know how much – we know how much the Lakers value him. We don't know how much the league – around the league values him. I don't know what type of wing you will be able to get. Some people put Cam Reddish out there. I don't know if ATL would go for that. Like, two-way – wings who have shown two-way potential in their early 20s, those are highly coveted players. So I don't know if Cam Reddish is realistic.
If you're going to look for anybody in the Hawks, it has to be Bogdanović.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Bogdanović, I think, because the – you know, the age factor. But yeah, I don't know who you can even trade THT for. He, I think his cap hit's what, 10 million? He's on 3 for 30, right?
He's like, yeah, so THT's 10 million basically. Right. Him and him together would be 15. And I think Bogdanović is at like, I think he's at 18. So just them two together, I think, miss the minimum threshold, or he may have to just add in one, minimum filler, which I, you can just throw in Bazemore to get him out of there, and you can get that, and you can get Bogdanović. I think him and Grant are more realistic targets based on the teams they play for. Grant being on a rebuilding team that might just want to flip him for assets, and
my only thing with Grant, you talk about Jeremy Grant, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the minute it's known that he's on the board, I just, the Lakers just get outbid because of how good he is.
Yeah, I get you. You know what I mean? Like, if like any real contender wanted him, they could get him. It's kind of similar thing with Bogdanović too, you know?
Yeah.
It's just going to come down to how much teams value THC at the end of the day.
All right. Knocking these out. All right, let's go finish with some AD questions. What grade from STL made me? What grade would you guys give AD thus far in the season? I'll let you take that one first.
I'll give him a C.
Well, a C?
Yeah, I'll give him a C, only because he's putting up stats. But, I mean, two terrible losses to OKC. You know, he's been battling through injury, so I don't question his effort every game, but it's definitely been times mentally where he just looks disengaged, even when he wasn't battling the stomach flu. He's just, you know, that game with Giannis is like, you know, you know, that's one of those games where as a top dog, you're supposed to take that matchup. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the thing with LeBron and KD is like every single game, both of them would be cooking each other. You know what I mean? It's like, even if somebody, when KD got off, Brown would make sure he got off. When Brown was getting off, KD would make sure he got off. Like, it wasn't one of those where they would be like, they would just be fine with the other person cooking and they wouldn't want to do nothing. It's like, all-time greats take those type of games personal. You know what I mean? And for him to not take it personal kind of just it kind of, I think, hit home to a lot of people why people say what they say about Anthony Davis. But he's going to get his numbers. He's going to produce, and he's going to be able to put you in positions to compete and win. So got to give him a C. But in terms of expecting dominance, expecting top elite, top five play, he's not doing that. And that's what you're paying him for. That's what you traded the kids for. That's what you got his first season. And you haven't got that since. So that's the type of scale we're grading AD on. It's a C right now.
Ooh, that's tough. I will give him a B. Because the Lakers do have a lot of injuries and odd fitting parts. And he's still finding a way to put in numbers. It's just been, like I said, too many times where I forget a guy that talented is on a basketball court. And that's been my only complaint about AD. And he's not all the way locked in defensively this season for some reason. I know he has to cover for a lot more because it's a lot of bad on-ball defenders on the Lakers this year. But he just hasn't been locked in on that end. That's, you know, but he's just putting up crazy numbers. Not crazy, but just like consistent, you know, just output, which is tough to, you know, overlook. Like he is giving them a baseline of production. You just kind of want him to put his imprint on the game more, like instead of a silent, you know, 28-10, you know, I'll take a loud, you know, 25 and just, you know, the timing of buckets, they'll, you know, make an impact plays on both ends. Like tonight, matter of fact, like sitting down on Cade late in the game, taking him out the game, making big shots late, just, you know, being a superstar that the Lakers traded for. And yeah, that's kind of what, you know, that's been missing a lot of the season that, and, you know, it, I don't know if he's still battling injury and not feeling well, but at some point to the Lakers to reach their ceiling, I think AD is going to have to hit another level.
I would have given him a B even with the see, like last year, for example, I gave AD a B last year. Why? Because he competed defensively. He's not competing defensively this year, like on a consistent basis. He's just not doing it. Like last year, even though he was inconsistent defensively, I think he gave more effort on that end. I think he was being more effective on that end last year. So that's why last year I would give him a B, because he was battling injury, but he was still effective defensively. And even though offensively he was struggling because of that injury, he was still making impact because he was making himself felt defensively. I don't think he's making himself felt defensively this year or on the glass. So even though he's getting his numbers, he's not making too much impact throughout the game, but he's making enough to make them competitive. And in games that they've won, he has had winning plays, but it's just been too inconsistent. That's why they are where they are. So, yeah, he's like, you know what I mean? It's one thing, like you see Jokic, bro. You see how Jokic is playing. He's playing with ragtag guys right now too. I mean, MPJ's out. He has some quality guys like Barton and whatnot that are giving him some production, but he has to carry that team, and that's what he's doing. You know, if you're an elite guy, if you're an elite big man, that's what you got to do. You know what I mean? That's the type of players people say he is. So that's what he has to do. Like you can't say he's this, but not give him those expectations. Like that's corny. That's always been corny. I hate fans who do that because you really don't believe in what you're saying, bro. Like you really don't. You're just being a typical biased fan. I don't like having conversations with fans like that. Have a principle, have a standard, stick to it, bro. Like stop.
Right.
Like that's corny. Like I don't do that.
Right. And that leads us to our last question. Great segue, Kings. From Real Deal Mav. Who y'all taking between AD, Jokic, and B to start a team? And how good of a PG is Russ right now? Is he an above average starter with Hield and keeping shoulder with last year's team to move the needle better than Russ in the moves right now? Well, that's a good way to end. So let's start the first question. AD, Jokic, and B to start a team. Kings, who you got out of the three?
I'm taking Jokic.
Same answer.
And like I told people before, I think between AD and MB, I think it's even. I think it just comes down to the type of roster you have.
Yeah, I got to go with Jokic, man. It's just, there's something about being there every night, right? And then just, I very rarely do I watch Jokic and I say, damn, is Jokic playing? It's like he has his imprint on the game, whether he's scoring 30 or he has, you know, 19, because he's dominant in some other fashion, whether it's through the playmaking or facilitating. And I just, you know, it actually from, you know, Embiid's standpoint, they call Anthony Davis, you know, day-to-day Davis. Embiid's the one who's got the health issues more so if you look at the actual games played. So that's his issue. And I just think, you know, this isn't the worst thing. People take it wrong. I think AD's just more comfortable being a supplemental guy.
Yeah.
I think that's just where his, you know, his disposition is. And you saw that in 2020 when LeBron was, he was very comfortable like playing off LeBron, yeah, eating off him. And just that's where he looked his best. There's nothing wrong with that. It just kind of is what it is. And we have to look at him through that lens instead of, is he on Giannis's level, which I think we can all say as of right now, that's, you know, kind of unfair to compare the two right now, despite what we think their skill sets are.
Giannis might end up a top 10 player all time.
Yeah, see, that's the trajectory Giannis is on. That's what I'm saying. Second question, how good of a PG is Russ right now? I'll say the last few games, he's looked a lot better. I'll say that. Overall, you know, he's probably a little bit above average in the whole grand scheme of things, looking at, you know, his effect on actual winning the game and not just numbers. Where do you have him?
Yeah, that's really it, above average, because he's not, I mean, as a playmaker, he still makes good reads, but he makes a lot of bad decisions. He also likes to hunt. He also likes the hero ball, but he still makes a lot of plays, but it's just inconsistent. You know, with the amount of good plays he makes, he also makes the same amount of bad plays. You know what I mean? For somebody making $44 million, that's a problem. You know what I mean? If he was making Schroeder contract, like, you know, I mean, if he was making Schroeder's contract last year, you know, $16 million doing this, it's not a problem because you're making $16 million. You'll probably get other players to help you out. And we're moving just fine, but you're making $44 million. So if you're making $44 million, that means you need to be having 8-2 assist to turnover ratio, especially if you're not being asked to score a lot because you're playing off LeBron and AD. So you should be having a great assist to turnover ratio. You should be having you should be doing your job on the boards. Like that's part of your skill set. You should be defending more than anything else. You know what I mean? Like, he should be having more of a Jason Kidd type game with playing off LeBron and AD, you know, being good offensively, getting boards, making smart reads and getting a lot of assists as a secondary playmaker. Like, that's how he should be playing, but he's trying to be a star off other stars who are better than him. And he himself has lost a step. Like, that's just what it is. I mean, the Lakers also don't have the type of build around him to get him going, because part of what got him going with the Wizards, people don't understand, he was a good fit on the Wizards. The Wizards had a lot of floor spacers. Like, they had a lot of floor spacers. They ran one big, you know what I mean? They had Bradley Beal, who was a shooting threat, obviously Batons, and, you know what I mean, Rui, who could shoot. And it's like they were able to space the floor and just have Russ rim run all day. But the Lakers they can't play like that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
LeBron can't play like that. I mean, LeBron can space a little bit here and there, but he's not, you don't want him to be just floor spacing. And then AD, he's not a real floor spacer. You know what I mean? And then they have a lot of guys who can shoot but need the ball in their hands. So it's like Russ needs to be an off ball guy on the Lakers. So he's being, like you said, he's above average, but he's getting paid $44 million. So above average is not even close to good enough to how he should be playing.
Yeah, that let Russ run the show week was definitely wild on put Brown off the ball, man. Last one, got to get spicy. He asked, the last question he asked, would Hield and keeping shoulder with last year's team move the needle better than Russ in the moves right now? Ooh.
I'll go ahead and answer. I've been saying on time, hell yeah. No, I don't understand what everybody's talking about, dude. Like really, you keep Schroeder, people keep saying, oh, what is Buddy Hield wouldn't do anything. Bro, why do you guys keep talking about Buddy Hield as if it would just be him? You get Buddy Hield, you get KCP, you get Caruso, you get Schroeder, your whole perimeter defense changes. Right. Your perimeter defense changes at the guard spot. You still can sign Trevor Ariza to his minimum. You still have that wing deficiency, but now it's not as pressing because you can actually wait till the buyout. You can actually maybe move like a KCP, right?
you know, if he's not performing, or even move healed if he's underperforming for an actual wing, or just wait to the bio for another wing. You know what I mean? Because now you have guys, though, who you can trust on defense, or you have a Buddy Hield who's an elite floor spacer who's just going to spot up at a high level, as well as be able to shoot off the bounce, off of pick and roll.
But my main thing, when people hearing people talk about, hearing some Laker fans talk about Buddy Hield, I was like,
you've never watched Buddy Hield play. She shoots off the bounce, bro. If you ran a pick and roll with Buddy Hield and AD, they're not going under that screen.
Right.
Like, you don't understand that. Like, they're literally not going under the screen. They can't, because Buddy Hield will shoot that three every single time, and he can make it. So, you know what I mean? So it's like, for me, people are like, well, their record wouldn't be better than now. But it's like, bro, do you care about the Lakers winning in November? I don't care.
Right.
Like, I don't care how they look in November. I care about, what does this team look like in the playoffs? Will this team have a better fit in the playoffs when it matters, and when you're putting the ball in LeBron's hands? Because at the end of the day, that's what everybody asks for. But we're going to put the ball in LeBron's hands. Well, then build the team around LeBron James then. Why are you having Russell Westbrook there if you're saying to me that when it matters, you're just going to have LeBron James handle the ball? Well, then build the team that makes LeBron James and Anthony Davis looks the best. Like, that's the logic that you should be having. Like, if that's how the team is going to win, that's the logic you need to be having. It's to build the team around those two guys. So it's like, bro, I get it. You want the Westbrook stuff to work because you want to feel validated and you want to win a chip. Speak into existence if you have to, bro. But look, y'all, I hope you have excuses ready. If they don't make deadline moves, I just hope you have the excuses and the narrative points ready, bro, because we know how Russ plays in the playoffs, bro. Like, it's just, it doesn't need to be said over and over again.
Ooh. We're going to end with that. I think I agree with you. They probably wouldn't have a worse record because LeBron is out without what they went that route last year. But the long game wise, I definitely could see why somebody would say, give me Hield and Schroeder, and then have those other supplemental pieces back.
And those guys with, even with that bad Drummond pickup, those guys were actually still competing. You know what I mean? Those guys were competing last year. So if you get those guys and you add a heel to it, you know what I mean? Like, they could compete. Like, if you add a heel to them, they could compete and still maintain. Like, does that team lose two games to OKC? No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't lose two games to OKC. Like, so it's like, come on, man.
Make sure you follow at It's Kings, bruh, on Twitter. Myself, JJMavis55 _ MST. You know, when the Cowboys beat the Raiders on Thanksgiving, looking forward to next week's show, rubbing that in. It's hard now. Kings don't like his quarterback, so it's rough right now. He don't like his quarterback.
But you know, Temple Hoop, we gonna try and see if we can make an appearance on our good friends at the Deep Thirds podcast. Make an appearance for the Thanksgiving pod.
Yeah, we gonna see what's happening at that. Anyway, hit follow, subscribe on the pod, leave us feedback. We appreciate that. Appreciate you guys tapping in, and yes, we are out of here.
Peace, y'all.